everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities Podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, Managing Editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's February 2023, and you are listening to episode 327, which is a conversation about the February 5th Grammy Awards broadcast, and specifically about the performance by singers Sam Smith and Kim Petras, who performed their single, Unholy, with a satanic theme. On this episode, I'm joined by Dr. John Ferrer, who is a content creator for Cross-Examined Ministries and a teaching fellow with Equal Rights Institute. He has an MDiv in apologetics and a THM and PhD in ethics and philosophy of religion. He is also married to Christian apologist and author Hillary Ferrer of Mama Bear Apologetics. John has written an online exclusive feature article for the Christian Research Journal about this performance. His article is called A Christian Apologist Responds to Sam Smith and Kim Petras' Satanic Grammy Performance. And this article is free for everyone at our website, equip.org. Now, we occasionally make articles free and don't put them specifically as exclusives to our subscribers because we want to have people get a taste of some of the things that we cover on trending subjects so that you can decide that you would like to subscribe to our journal, which you can do at equip.org. Now, I do want to give this disclaimer. While nothing explicit is discussed in the article or in this podcast, the subject matter of the Unholy song lyrics and the original music video and this performance is rated R. John, it's good to have you on the podcast again.
Good to be here.
Well, if anyone's been following the news lately, they've seen that the annual Grammy Awards for the Recording Academy for Music were held in Los Angeles last week, and there was some controversy that erupted around the Grammy performance of singers Sam Smith and Kim Petras. So their performance during the ceremony of their hit single, Unholy, is a depiction of what it seemed like to be Satan. And of course, then Kim was like in this kind of cage dancing and everybody was wearing red or, you know, kind of had this Satanist type of vibe mixed with sexuality. So I just wanted to ask about it because there's been an outcry about this, mainly from politically conservative groups, family groups, Christian groups that are concerned about a glorification of Satanism through this performance. So first of all, I want to ask you a little bit about Sam Smith and Kim Petras, because maybe some people who are listening to this podcast, Christians, don't know who they are. Who are they?
Well, I'm not a pop music historian, but I'm familiar with a little bit of the work of Sam Smith. He's kind of a soulful pop R&B singer. Kim Petras, I only know from this song. But I have seen the occasional news blurb about Sam Smith as he's kind of followed or drifted himself with the cultural LGBT revolution. And he's come out as gay. He at one point, I think, identified as androgynous. So both male and female or neither male and female. And now I think his preferred terminology is queer. And he uses they, them pronouns. Kim Petras is a biological male who is a trans female with surgery and all of that. Now, by itself, that's already enough to kind of give them sort of a boost in terms of notoriety in the right circles, in, you know, progressive mainstream media circles. A lot of Hollywood kind of leans to the left and is looking to celebrate anybody who has enough courage to come out as LGBT. But setting that aside for a second, they're both really talented singers. And so they've earned a degree of their celebrity status. So they're not just riding the rainbow wave into celebrity status. They both are accomplished musical artists. They just have this other element that's an important part of understanding their story. So that's kind of where they come from. Sam Smith, on top of it, I've discovered a couple of his prior songs. He speaks about his drift away from mainstream and Christian religion. And this recent fiasco, I don't know if fiasco is the right word, but this recent event at the Grammys is very predictable given the trends that both of these people have been on. So it's not like it came out of left field, out of nowhere. They reflect trends in their own musical career and in the wider pop musical world as it stands. They're not the first ones, for example, to showcase deliberate satanic imagery and satanic theatrics in their performance. Not even in the pop world, much less metal, black metal, heavy metal, death metal, thrash, all of that stuff. You can find satanic themes all over the place in rock history if you expand your scope. But more recently, we started to see it with pop music. And then factor in the LGBT elements, and then factor in the BDSM. If you want me to explain that, I'm not quite sure I'm prepared to do that just now. But we're talking about kink and the sexual deviance beyond just LGBT stuff. That's a theme in that performance too. So if all of this is surprising to people, that's probably because they haven't checked back into the pop music scene in a while. But for those that have been following it and drifting themselves along with this gradual migration across historic boundaries, they can look at that performance and say, it was mind-blowing, it was amazing, it was great, because it's in keeping with a lot of the artistic and semantic drift that we've seen in the course of mainstream music. And Sam Smith and Kim Petras have been right in on that for years now.
You're right. Sam Smith has been around for quite some time. When he was first a new artist, he won 6 Grammy Awards back in 2015. And so it's been a, I guess, not necessarily a dry spell, but it's been a while since he's been featured at the Grammys. And they won this year for Best Pop Duo or Group Performance with Kim Petras. Well, we kind of have alluded to a little bit about the theatrical setting of this performance of their song Unholy, but could you tell our listeners, what is that song about exactly?
Well, this song Unholy, it is about a gentleman who leaves his wife and kids behind at the house and goes to a place called the Body Shop, where he engages in, quote, something unholy. And you hear a lot of references that make it sound like it's some sort of strip club or BDSM club. Very kinky, very perverse. And the song is laced with all sorts of allusions to hedonism and sexual descriptions. The video, the music video, makes it look kind of like a gender-bending strip club cabaret. The performance at the Grammys is a little more streamed down and is more over the top with the satanic themes, with, you know, pyrotechnics and smoke machines, lots of red lighting, devil horns, red latex, red leather chains, all of that stuff. But in many ways, the Grammy performance is more tame than the music video, which has all of the satanic themes, but is a bit more story form in that it communicates the story of this man running around on his wife with cross-dressing drag queen type strippers, having relations with them, and then himself dying in what appears to be a car crash. And then the big reveal at the end of the music video is the wife takes off her wig and reveals that the wife's actually a man too. So that's the music video. So you end up with a lot of these intersexual boundary bursting themes that have been, for the most part, separate in rock history, but now they're all coming together. And the force of it is kind of shocking to people. It is kind of overwhelming. We've seen, you know, gender bending themes. We've seen Lola by the band called The Kinks. We've seen Dude Looks Like a Lady by Aerosmith. We've seen Liberace and Little Richard, Elton John. So it's not hard at all to find gay musicians in rock history. But usually that's not tied in with Satanism. But recently we started to see that with Nas. And that's also been a feature in a lot of heavy metal and hard rock before. So it's usually you separate those things and then you don't necessarily add a whole lot of overt sexuality. But that has been a common theme in a lot of pop and R&B. And you put it all together and you end up with something that's really an eyeful, to put it politely. It's pretty offensive, since it seems to be intentionally blasphemous. And when you hear their interviews, they talk about how they felt that church wasn't the place for them once they started to come out or figure out who they were. Their identity was their leverage against the church. It's not like they questioned their identity and returned to the church. They rejected the church rather than question their adopted identity in LGBT categories. And so they're trying to stick their thumb in the eye of historic Christianity. They say religion generally, but you can tell from their dancing that they're genuflecting, but they're inverting it. So they're making the sign of the cross on their head and chest, but it's upside down. And, you know, no other religion has genuflection. That's a Catholic thing. That's a Christian thing. So when they invert the Christian cross, it's pretty clear what religion they're trying to thumb their nose at. Yet they're celebrated by their fans as being so courageous. I'm not sure I would grant that it's all that courageous. I'm sure it takes some courage just to get out there and perform, because people routinely report that they are more scared of public speaking than they are of dying. So if you're getting out there and you're not just public speaking, you're singing, you're dancing, you're in weird outfits, okay, there's some courage there. But it's not courage like offending Islam in a public setting. It's not courage like saying LGBT is wrong and I'm going to still stay in Hollywood. You know, that would take more courage because there's risk involved. You're liable to hurt your career or risk your life by taking those kinds of stands. This move for Sam Smith and Kim Petras didn't put their lives at risk. It didn't put their careers at risk. If anything, it offered a great deal of advancement for them because it lined them right up as the darlings of the progressive left right now.
I hope you'll agree with me that each week the Postmodern Realities podcast really brings you just cutting edge topics that we talk about for Christians to respond to and Christians to think about critically from a biblical worldview. And we need your support. And how you can support us really is to subscribe to the Christian Research Journal. It's $33.50, and you can do that at equip.org. Now, I know that it's probably on the back of your mind, yes, I'd like to subscribe, but you haven't just gone ahead and pulled the trigger. Well, would you consider pulling the trigger even this week? Maybe giving up some of your favorite coffees this month at your local coffee shop that you go to, or maybe eating out, or maybe deciding to stream a movie instead of going to the theater, so that you can subscribe to this journal, and subscribers will get year-round access to all of our online exclusives, get our print issue, and also be equipped to be able to respond to all kinds of issues and topics, plus be equipped in their faith to draw closer to Christ. So please consider helping us out as a partner and a subscriber at equip.org for $33.50. A few moments ago, John mentioned Lil Nas X, who's a rapper. He received some fame having this song called Old Town Road that I think he was discovered on some social media. It might have been TikTok or something like that, and became very famous for it. And he also identifies as LGBTQ, and he also has used Satanism in some of his more recent work. But that makes me want to ask John about the Satanism itself, because, you know, the kind of the media has been saying, or the, you know, media has been saying, well, this is like a portrayal of Satanism and it's on full display and they're Satanists. But really, what is the Satan? You know, tell us a little bit about Satanism and what was being displayed as Satanism. And was that true Satanism that was in that Grammy performance?
Well, the Satanic Temple was interviewed for their thoughts and comments on this performance, and they were kind of unimpressed. It was a collective meh from the Satanic Temple. But oddly enough, I kind of agree with them in one regard, that for one, it wasn't anything authentically satanic in the sense of this is how Satanists self-identify, this is how they practice, this is their theology. It wasn't any insider information on any of that. It could be satanic in a different sense, but it wasn't satanic in the sense that Satanists said, oh yeah, that's what we do. That's we normally wear those kinds of clothes. If anything, and this is a sense in which I will agree with their assessment, this is actually kind of tame compared to some of the other events that have gone on. You mentioned Little Nas. That's pretty obvious. If you've seen, if you've tracked any Norwegian death metal or black metal, you know of church burnings and things where people are scarring themselves up and cutting themselves up as part of their performance. And it's the lyrics are deliberately blasphemous and over the top and foul. And then some will even have like ritual type of behavior from the stage. So compared to what Sam Smith and Kim Petras did, it looks kind of garish and not quite corny, but almost making light of it. So in that sense, it wasn't satanic. Now, I said there's another sense in which it could still be satanic. I'll get to that in a moment. But when it comes to Satanism, a major misconception people often have is they don't realize that Satanism, at least since about the 1960s, has been predominantly atheistic, not believing in a literal personal Satan and not believing in a literal God. From the outside looking in, people might think, oh, you believe in the same main characters that Christians do. You just worship the other team. We're on this team, you're on the other team. That's kind of how we might think of it. But LaVeyan Satanism, from named after Anton LaVey, he founded the Church of Satan back in 1969. And he represents a certain denominational stream, you might say, of Satanism, which probably isn't the main one today, but I'm sure it's still around. It's atheistic. It affirms the use of magic. So they could still use the term and the name of Satan. They're not talking about a specific person, but they might be talking about a force. They might be gathering the force within them and within others and conjuring and directing it according to their magical intent. And they would say there's no firm divide between white magic and black magic. It's really part of the same continuum, but they would affirm what's called the witch's reed, do what thou wilt. And they recognize that whatever happens to you, you're liable to get that much and more back on you. So if you do good, okay, well, you'll get good back. The Secret kind of uses the same Wiccan occult New Age shared principle that goes all the way to Satanism as well. But that's one of the constraints. So if you do want to do bad to someone and you're willing to receive bad back, well, go ahead. LaVeyan Satanism doesn't have any constraints on you doing that. They're generally law-abiding. They have an actual church. I think it was founded in San Francisco in 69. But that's Anton LaVey's brand of Satanism. More recently, in the 21st century, was founded the Satanic Temple by, I think it was co-founded, but the main guy behind it right now is Lucien Greaves. And if LaVey's Satanism was kind of an anarcho-libertine kind of worldview, occult art anarcho-libertarian worldview, Lucien Greaves' Satanic Temple is more like a radical progressive worldview. They too see themselves as atheists. They don't affirm the use of magic. Now, some might still do it, but that's not any mainstay for their church doctrines. They identify heavily with the political left. They're strong on pro-choice. They are strong on trying to combat uses of religious freedom that seem to give the Christian church priority. And so they'll push back and say, well, if you're going to have a Bible club at your school, well, we're going to have a satanic club at your school. Same religious freedom. And they interpret religious freedom more as sort of a mandated secularism in the public square because they're particularly concerned about theocratic abuse, theocratic overreach from Christian influence in society. One big thing that unites both of these camps, these two denominations, is they ascribe to the left fold path. So in Christianity, we talk a lot about righteousness. The word right is there in the word. We're talking about doing what's right. And this goes way, way back to the sense that on the right side is what's good, on the left side is bad. Just kind of customary symbology, nothing hard and fast there. But to sit at someone's right hand was to be seated at the position of privilege. In the left hand, not so much. Back in the days when it came to sword fighting, they would train you how to fight with a right hand grip. And they didn't train so much left hand. Left hand was considered sinful or wrong or just rebellious. Like if you preferred to write with a pencil with your left hand, well, that was understood to be rebellious. So all of that to say this, the left fold path represents an alternate path, where you understand good and evil differently, where you're trying to take the path less chosen. You look at the mainstream, the majority, the authorities, and you do the other thing. That's kind of the leftfold path. I said in my article with you guys before, if oppositional defiance disorder was a religion, it would be the Satanic Temple. And I think that's what the leftfold path kind of represents. It can be very snarky. They can be meme warriors. They're very legally savvy. They've got a lot of lawyers on their side. But when it comes to trying to make a strong connection between either Levian Satanism or the Satanic Temple, those two and the performance by Sam Smith and Kim Petras, there's not a very strong connection. They don't tie in together. LaVey, Greaves, Sam Smith, not much tying those two together in any kind of unholy triad. But what you do see there, the Satanism that I think they do kind of represent is this leftfold path. They're not trying to embody any formal ties between Lucian Greaves or Anton LaVey, but they're living their best life now, which is kind of a quick summary of what Satanism would teach. Your best life now.
You did mention earlier that Kim Petras identifies as a trans woman. She was born biologically male. And then Sam Smith has evolved, and you're right. He now says that he's genderqueer and he identifies as both male and female. So as you said, that, and including the lyrics which of their song, which I want to tell our listeners, on YouTube, and that doesn't include other platforms, of course, it's had over 137 million views. So a lot of people have watched the video of this song, which, as you said, is a lot more dark than their actual Grammy performance, and the lyrics tell more of a story. I don't think you can tell in the performance, if that's the first time you heard this song, that it was about this, you know, married couple where with children, where the dad is going out to this BDSM club. And so, you know, that's full of all kinds of other, not just like you're saying, trans folks and just kind of all different kinds of people at this club. So do you think that their identification with the LGBTQ community, did it have anything to bear or connect to these theatrics? Did they choose the theatrics because they, for a specific reason, did they want to connect Satanism to the queer community?
I think they are trying to check all the boxes of offending the right people in the right ways so that they can get that kind of controversial notoriety, because controversy draws crowds. So as a publicity stunt, it works. But I don't think it's just a publicity stunt. I think it also serves as a vent for them, because there's a lot of apparent animosity towards organized religion and Christianity specifically, because there's no real denying the fact that the historic Christian church teaches contrary to LGBT behavior, LGBT lifestyles. That's the normal teaching of the church, is traditional Christian marriage, one man, one wife for life, that kind of thing. And that performance is an effort, I think, to stick their thumb in the eye of historic Christianity. Yes, it checks the boxes that will win them a lot of notoriety and win them a lot of praise from the socio-political left, mainstream media, Hollywood, and all that. But I think it's a bit more than that, because for them, it's events. It's a way to get back at folks they perceive as the true oppression. And I think if there were enough time and opportunity, there'd be a chance for them to realize that perhaps it's not the church, Christianity, and Christians that are the source of that discomfort, that unsettled sense of self when you're living in this lifestyle that betrays natural law. I think ultimately there's a deeper sense of the conscience that there's something wrong here. There's something wrong with me, my behavior. This isn't right. And while it's totally correct, totally accurate to point out hypocrisy in the church and abuses by Christian authorities, once you've set that aside, you still can't make yourself, for Kim Petras, for example, you still can't make your male body into a female. Every cell in your body is male. And you can do the surgery, you can change your voice, you can have the hormones, but you're not a female. And that doesn't mean it was going to be easy to stay a male with whatever circumstances led you to feel like a female. But trying to identify as a female is a lost cause, I would say. And this person needs a lot of help, needs a lot of prayer, needs a lot of encouragement in the right direction, but does not necessarily need affirmation in the wrong direction. And the same goes for Sam Smith. I see a lot of hurt in him. I haven't studied Kim Petras as much, but I see a man who really is struggling to find his place in the world. He's super talented. He seems like a really gentle spirit underneath, but he carries a lot of hurt with him. And it was hard not to see that hurt come out like he was lashing out, playing the character of Satan just to offend and get back at folks who may have actually hurt him or he perceives as being the source of his hurt. So I think that performance, yes, it's garish, not really what Satanism looks like. It might celebrate what Satanism really is underneath the surface, that leftfold path. It checks the boxes of offending all the right people. It's a publicity stunt. But I think it still boils down to a set of choices that these two performers made because they're really hurt and offended and want to put the blame on the church.
So you talked about how everything isn't really shocking anymore and that it was celebrated by everybody in attendance, all their peers that gave them the award for best group. And it you know, but they were trying to be deliberately offensive, I think. And yet they were really well received by their peers. And were they hoping by making this cultural statement, because this year, actually, Grammy viewership was significantly up. It had been going down over the years. And now all kinds of people, not just the people in the room who were, you know, their peers, other musicians that are well known and well regarded over all kinds of genres. I mean, not just pop music for which they won the award, but there was, you know, everything from hip hop to country to everything in between, even gospel. All those folks were in attendance. And yet, you know, they received a standing ovation for this performance. And so I'm just wondering, what were they hoping to gain by being this shocking because so many people watched the Grammys? It wasn't just the folks in the room from quote unquote Hollywood that would be celebrating it.
Well, in some ways, the media establishment, the entertainment industry, is undergoing a huge earthquake right now as they're trying to adjust to the shift to streaming media and the shift away from a lot of your conventional formalities, like releasing a full album and getting most of your income from that album on sales of that album, like people getting a record or a disc or a tape. That's not really the model anymore. When it comes to live broadcasts, people aren't watching live broadcasts that much anymore, unless you count sports, but this wasn't sports. A lot of our viewership for things like award shows have been declining over the past 3 years. And the Grammys, for this performance, I think, and ones like it, was an anomaly compared to the trends over the last few years where viewership is just declining gradually because that centralized approach to media isn't as prominent anymore or isn't as successful anymore. It's now very decentralized. And now some guy with a guitar and a gimmick on YouTube with a 1 minute clip might end up with a million views. That's the kind of thing that you can do in this media age. And so it's changed the industry very, very significantly. Now, when the Grammys were able to reclaim a lot of viewership, that might be a sign of hope for some people. I don't know that that's anything more than a blip, but nevertheless, it can be a publicity stunt, but I think for them, it serves a little something more because it is celebrating LGBT identity. And the alliances don't necessarily line up the way you might expect because they're bringing in the imagery of Satan to clearly posture LGBT and BDSM and sex positivism. They're trying to position that all in one big ball of wax that's opposed to Christianity and organized religion. So if you're going to try to cheer for LGBT in that case, you risk cheering for Satanism, or at least a caricature of Satanism, and BDSM, which is going to be kink and leather and that kind of stuff, and sex positivism. So this partisanship that's kind of controlling a lot of the narratives out there, often it kind of challenges people to pick one villain over another villain. You can't just be a principled independent thinker. You have to cheer for Satan and BDSM and sex positivism if you're going to be part of the Rainbow Revolution. And on the other end, if you're going to root for a conservative candidate, that means you're some Trump supporter. That means you're a theocrat. That means you're a white nationalist. And you end up with extremes that look kind of weird. And I think the Grammys kind of illustrated what that looks like, because they got a standing ovation for something where people could have said, I kind of like the song, but their performance was really offensive. That wasn't an option. Or if they framed the song in a negative as the guy they're singing about is bad and he's done wrong, then you frame the song very differently. It could be the slightest of tweaks, but this performance and the video show that they make it a celebration of drag and of BDSM and strip clubs and running around on your wife and abandoning your family. And I don't think the people standing up to cheer for this were really saying those are good things. I think in their minds, they probably thought this was just art. And in some ways it was well performed. The song it's an earwig of a song. It's catchy. It's hard not to find yourself bebopping to it. It's theatrically grandiose. The video, just from a purely aesthetic standpoint, was very interesting and well shot. It's just the message is tremendously offensive. And so if you see yourself as some purity art critic or just a rarefied musician who just appreciates music for the sake of music, you might cheer for this. But at the same time, you risk cheering for a whole bunch of other things that are stuffed in there like some sort of pork barrel legislation. And that's just kind of how it is. You really have to hold your applause to yourself so that when you've got an opportunity to clarify what you support and what you don't, then you can say, okay, I agree with this part and not that part. But often when it comes to a situation where your career is on the line and you have to make sure that you don't offend the woke mob, well, you tend to stand up and cheer when other media moguls stand up and cheer.
So what is the meaning of the song that Sam Smith and Kim Petras are trying to get across? Like you said, it's told in the video in more of a very artistic story form, like a little movie almost of this story. And what are they hoping that they are communicating about what they perceive as what would be good?
Well, in their own discussion of this song, they talk about it as quite liberating for them, fun, queer joy, to use Sam Smith's phrase. That seems odd to me, but it's not really when you consider that this song isn't direct. It's not saying yay this or boo that. It's kind of presenting, it's describing the scenes of this guy stepping out on his wife. And in the video, it's portrayed as an auto body shop that is sort of a speakeasy strip club in the back room. And he goes to the back room and sees everybody on stripper poles and dancing on stage. And it's kind of a LGBT burlesque setting. And you hear these sexual descriptions. They don't show, like, there's no nudity, but there's a lot of risque sexual allusions and stuff like that. And so it describes this whole scene all the way to the end, where it adds something that's not in the lyrics, the car accident where he apparently dies for his sins. That's in the video and not in the lyrics of the song. And you can kind of tell, because the way Sam Smith and Kim Petras describe the song, for them, it's a liberating experience. It's sort of a subtle celebration of these things. Well, how could that be unless it's sort of told ironically or told with kind of a smirk. They're talking about, oh, all these bad things, all these terrible things, wink, wink. That's kind of the assessment I get of this song, according to the singers and the ones who wrote this song. I think they're trying to open the door a little bit more for sexual deviance and LGBT identities, but they can frame it a little bit as, oh yeah, that's terrible. That's terrible. We would never support that. But that's framing. Art has a long history of using framing techniques so you could say what's really on your mind and can be incredibly offensive and intolerable beneath the authorities that be. But if you frame it as, oh yeah, all this stuff we're describing, all these horrible acts, yeah, we don't approve of these. But make sure you note all these details and all of this pornography, all of this sadism, all of this masochism, all this BDSM. Oh yeah, yeah, that's bad. Yeah, he dies for his sins at the end, so it's a happy ending. But there's that wink at the end, because it's a framing technique, which is a way to slip in whatever message you want, and you put a frame around it, and then you pretend that the frame recontextualizes all of it. When oftentimes the frame is just a cheap little ploy you use to end up talking about and playing out and celebrating behavior that polite society would find reprehensible.
Well, one thing is this, you know, you talked about how the traditional music model is no longer really the majority, like you said, it's true. Justin Bieber, he was a teenage kid 10 years ago when he was on YouTube and got discovered. I mean, he wasn't discovered in the normal ways. He just started getting all these fans on YouTube and then he was discovered. And now he's this big, internationally well-known singer at such a young age. But you know, like you were saying, there's not the typical, you know, we don't have back in the day, there was the top 40 and everyone would listen to the radio and they don't do that anymore. Either they're watching the videos on YouTube or they hear snippets of the song. Like you said, it does have a catchy hook to it on social media, you know, TikTok reels or Instagram reels and that kind of thing. And so, you know, it's kind of gotten out there. And I think maybe some of the people who are singing along to it might not really know what it is about unless they went onto YouTube and watched the full video. And so
I heard the song sitting in a dentist chair this morning.
Oh, really? Oh,
my goodness.
Yeah. Well, it's everywhere. So pretty soon we're probably going to hear an instrumental version of it, you know, in the grocery store.
Yep.
So, you know, it's kind of everywhere. And so that, and of course, then people are going to look it up. So how can Christians, you know, be more aware of what they're listening to these days? Because a lot more sexually explicit songs come out. And, you know, a lot of times you don't know what the songs are about. Like I watch videos for cooking on Instagram and sometimes, oh, that's an interesting song. I look it up and I'm like, oh my goodness, the words, that's terrible. So a lot of times, you know, people aren't realizing what some of these things are about and what they mean and how they're antithetical to a Christian worldview. So how can Christians be, you know, more aware of this? And also, how can they now respond? So we've got parents that their kids might be humming this song because, like you said, you heard it in the dentist chair and their kids might not have looked on YouTube to see what it was really about. So how can, you know, parents be equipped too? Because that is something, you know, back in the day, kids weren't exposed to songs about BDSM, for example.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's a huge question because we are strangers in a strange land. We are in many ways exiles in Babylon. And when we recognize that reality, that we don't live in a nation that is still being directed largely by or primarily by Christian mores and Christian convictions, we have to approach culture and society like it's not broadly our friend. Now, I don't want to be alarmist here. I'm not trying to make a bunch of preppers out of your audience, like everybody's going to go out in the woods and try to be totally independent of all society. I don't think that's really a viable answer for most people. But I do want people to think in terms of countercultural posturing. Probably a better way to say this is alternative cultural posturing. mainstream culture is going to drift in ways that reflect the populations. And so it's going to look like humanity looks like in our moral decay over time. And so we have to expect that culture isn't necessarily going to do the heavy lifting for us like maybe in the past it had. So for example, if you live in a small town and your church is trying to have a big teaching emphasis on LGBT material, it's important to assume that even if you've got mostly healthy families, that's probably an exaggeration, even your average small town, but let's suppose that you've got mostly healthy families at that church. You can't assume that the cultural mores that the young people are picking up are going to help them more than hurt them in becoming healthy husbands and wives with healthy kids and healthy families one day. We can't assume that society is doing more help than harm in that regard. So the burden of responsibility is a lot more on church and family to be intentional and deliberate, because wider society isn't going to be helping you all that much in those regards. So a countercultural posturing, or even better, an alternative cultural posturing is especially important. I distinguish those two because the risk with saying countercultural is you become reactionary. In that sense, you're just doing whatever is the opposite of what culture does. And that's just letting culture lead you. You've just got a longer chain, a longer leash. It's culture still leading you because you're reacting against them. But if they do this, you react the other way. They just do this other thing, you react another way. And culture's still calling your shots. They're just doing it inversely. But if we're seeing our role in society as that of exiles in a foreign culture, then we are trying to promote, endorse, and rebuild an alternative culture that's Christian, that's biblical, that has Christian principles guiding our decisions and our behavior. So that mindset makes all the difference in the world. Second, I would suggest we need to be very deliberate. Be very deliberate about your music. If you've got a chance to turn the lyrics on with whatever your preferred music player is, I'd recommend it. Take a look at what they're saying, or just do instrumentals. When I turn on the radio, and I do actually, I'm an old fogey, I still listen to the radio some, probably more than any other station, I listen to classical. I'm sure there's some exceptions where you've got some classical Satanism or something, but I still listen to classical, and it's usually lyric-free, and so I don't have to deal with the burden of whatever negative messaging is coming across in the lyrics. So that's a deliberate choice I make. I try to be conscious that the same rule that applies elsewhere applies to your mind. Garbage in, garbage out. If you're feeding your mind with drivel and junk and trash all the time because you like that kind of music, well, maybe you shouldn't like that kind of music. Maybe you should start dieting on that, or only listen to that style of music, that genre of music, after you've checked some kind of boxes to make sure that that's reasonably healthy music to listen to. Now, you're never going to be complete on that. That's why it's important to be cultivating discernment. And a big part of discernment is just being deliberate about the shows you watch, being deliberate about the songs you listen to. Don't just passively absorb all of that and let the lyrics just sink in and gradually erode your worldview. Listen to the lyrics. And if it's offensive to your Christian convictions, turn it off, change the station, do something else. You don't have to watch that show once they bring in that token LGBT character that was forced in there just to gradually acclimate you to thinking that it's all the same difference. You don't have to keep listening to that song once they celebrate infidelity. You can change the station or turn it off. Now, besides being countercultural or alternative in your culture, and besides being deliberate, I think we should just be observant as well. Just pay attention. A lot of what's out there right in front of us, if we were watching where we were going, we wouldn't walk that way. But a lot of what we're doing, we're not paying attention to where we're going. Now, this can happen for a couple reasons. Sometimes we're just busy, we're distracted, we have to keep moving, but you know, I've got to pick up the kids at soccer practice. I've got to make it to the bank. I've got to run by the office to drop off these papers, and you're distracted and you're not paying that much attention to where you're going and what's going along with you, like what's on the radio, how that billboard is influencing you. You're not necessarily paying attention to that because you're busy. But there's another reason why we might fail to observe what's right there in front of us. And that might be because we're walking backwards. We're letting culture and all its negatives decide where we go because we're just retreating from those things. We're just avoiding those things. And this constant avoidance means we're not necessarily turned around facing and deliberately going the direction we want to go. We're just avoiding the direction we don't want to go. But you can always back into something worse than whatever you're backing away from. And so it's important for us to be intentional. I said deliberate, that was my term before, but also observant. Choose paths that are worth going and then try to pay attention and understand that you're an exile in a strange land. Expect that. And I think those are going to do a lot of the prep work so that when you're trying to train yourself and your children for discernment, you'll be in a much better position because you already have been thinking in terms of the discernment needed for everyday operations. And then my fourth recommendation, besides being countercultural, being deliberate, and being observant, I'd say read up on Mama Bear Apologetics. I'm very biased. I'm married to the author and founder of Mama Bear Apologetics. But even if I wasn't married to her, I would still recommend anyone who has a family and who's concerned about how their kids are going to grow up in this crazy world. It's going to be really important that you get some resources in your hands and you start preparing for what that's going to look like. How do Christians raise their children differently? How do they go about marriage differently? And I think Mama Bear Apologetics, book one, Answering Cultural Lies, and book two, Guide to Sexuality, are tremendous resources, not just to give you the information base to understand what's going on, but also the skill training. So you can take stuff that you're already doing with your kids, that you're already doing with your spouse, and you can translate it into something that's going to train you in discernment. So you don't necessarily need to do more to be a better apologist in the home, but you do need to be deliberate about what you're already doing so that it's more apologetics oriented. And that will help impart the discernment, that will help train people to be observant. It will help you to be more deliberate about the decisions and directions you're going, and it will help reinforce a positive alternative culture compared to what's out there.
Some of our listeners, if you're newer listeners to this podcast, you might not know that John's wife has been on this podcast before, and her name is Hillary Ferrer, and she was on episode 153, and she was talking about the rise of emotionalism. So if you want to go back to the archives, you can do that and be able to listen to her talking about some material from her book. And also, we had a recent podcast on sexuality taken from some material of her new book with her co-author. So look for that episode, which is episode 312, which deals with purity culture and sex positivity. So those are ones that you can go and listen to. Well, thanks, John, for helping us understand a little bit of what was behind this performance in the satanic costumes at the Grammys last week. And I have finally a fun rapid fire question for John, a little bit lighter note that I want to end on. And John, I've been asking our authors to pick a word that they would like to describe what they hope for their life in 2023.
The first word that came to mind was just my favorite word, which has nothing to do with what I want my life to be like in 2023. My favorite word is rutabaga. Just because it's fun to say, and that's not exactly very prophetically valuable for my life going forward. But I have a kind of a virtue that I hold to this year that I'm trying to invest in and dig deeper into it. And I don't quite know what it's going to look like, but it's mercy. And so I hope to embody and live out and learn more about mercy in the course of this year.
Well, that's a really great word, and
much better than rutabaga.
Yeah, well, maybe you can eat rutabagas in 2023, but mercy is a good word for 2023 as well. Well, thanks, John, for being a guest on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to episode 327 of the Postmodern Realities podcast. Today's guest was Dr. John Ferrer, and he has written an online exclusive feature article for the Christian Research Journal. His article is called "A Christian Apologist Responds to Sam Smith and Kim Petras's Satanic Grammy Performance." You can read his article for free at our website, equip.org. Stay connected with the Christian Research Institute and all the new content we have coming your way. The best way to do that is to head on over to our website, equip.org. There you will find thousands of free resources right at your fingertips, from articles to video to audio, and it's all for free. You'll find our podcasts hosted there, as well as the Bible Answer Man broadcast, which is hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff and streams live every Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern. In addition, you don't want to miss out on subscribing to Hank Unplugged, which is the podcast of Hank Hanegraaff. And in that podcast, he has really in-depth, free-flowing, essential Christian conversations with some of the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people. And in addition, he has a new series on his podcast feed called Hank Unplugged Shorts, which Hank goes into the headlines in the mainstream media and refutes a lot of those cultural issues that we have in these short podcast episodes. And there's quite a few of them. You don't want to miss out on them. Now, if you want to find some of this at other places where it's all in one place, really subscribe to our YouTube channel. It's a great way to get all of our content there, our podcasts there, and different individual questions theologically that people have that Hank answers at our YouTube channel. Now, you might be thinking to yourself, I don't know how to subscribe to YouTube. I don't have a YouTube account. Well, actually, you might just have a YouTube account. If you have a Gmail address, you have a YouTube account. Just log into YouTube with your Gmail address and search for Bible Answer Man channel, and please become one of our subscribers. In addition, if you see that bell icon right there on our front page, please click that, and every time that we have new content, you will receive a notification that new content is up on our channel for you to be able to consume. So thank you so much for the ways in which you partner with the Christian Research Institute. We are grateful for you listening and reading and watching.